Welcome back to Earth's Fates podcast to episode 3. Today is February 23rd, 2021. I'm your host, Hedera, and this is my co-host, Kaylee.
Hi, my name is Kaylee.
Today we're going to have a special guest. Her name is Doreen Davis. So we are going to be discussing and then interviewing about should the U.S. government take aggressive steps to combat climate change. The way we will contour this podcast is with stating and answering questions and opinions based on our topic and coming to a conclusion at the end of the episode. A brief background of climate change, conservation, and nature. Climate change is a global and regional climate pattern that changes throughout time. Conservation is a way to preserve wasteful use of a resource, and nature includes plants, animals, and landscapes. In the article, should the U.S. government take aggressive steps to combat climate change, it states that scientists have already linked climate change to rising sea levels, droughts, loss of habitats, food shortages, and a growing risk of extinction in species.
To add, also in that article, should the U.S. government take aggressive steps to combat climate change? It states rising temperatures may be at least partly responsible for the increase severity and frequency of storms, wildfires, and other extreme weather events has led increasing urgency over how the best way to deal with the climate change.
Now let's get into the interview.
Get into this podcast. Would you mind explaining what you do to improve the environment and what is your role in your organization?
Yeah, so what the Wildlife Habitat Council does is we help businesses conserve wildlife habitat on their lands, and they do that through a variety of ways, through partnerships with other nonprofits, government agencies, other businesses, that sort of thing. And they also do it through conservation education. So, you know, broadening the community's knowledge on conservation issues and what they're doing on their lands to help wildlife habitat conservation. What I do specifically is I work with sites directly. So I don't know if you saw on our member page who some of the businesses are that we work with, but it's from a variety of industry sectors, including automotive manufacturing, the energy sector, so power companies, oil companies, also mining and extraction, so quarries and that sort of thing. And so I work with sites on a location basis. So say there's a quarry in a particular location. They have their operations where they're, you know, mining and extracting stone and other building materials out of the ground, but they also have buffer properties around these quarries that they have opportunities for wildlife habitat conservation. So I help them identify what some of those opportunities might be and how they can, you know, be better stewards of the land that they own. And the other part of our organization is certification. So we also offer a recognition of their conservation activities. And so I also help sites work towards getting certified. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
My question I had was, what does your organization do or specialize in to help conservation and climate change?
That's a great question. So our organization, we're mostly focused on the wildlife habitat side of things. So climate change is one component. They're not mutually exclusive. So, you know, habitat conservation does benefit climate change. So basically, some of the work that we're doing is working with businesses on how some of their climate adaptations and, you know, greenhouse gas emissions, you know, they have a lot of reporting metrics that they do along those lines with, you know, the amounts of greenhouse gases that they're emitting and how they're basically mitigating those effects through various different channels, whether it's, you know, smokestack scrubbers or nature-based solutions, where, you know, tree plantings and grassland restoration and that sort of thing can actually help capture CO2 and store it, which is also beneficial to wildlife.
In what way can others help your organization and help with nature?
Yeah, so most of our interactions are directly with businesses. So a lot of our funding does come from business, but you know, we encourage partnerships. So one of the things that we help facilitate is building partnerships, especially in urban areas like Chicago and Detroit, and, you know, fostering those partnerships with other NGOs, whether it's like Friends of the Rouge River, which is, you know, the major river through Detroit, or Friends of the Calumet region, which is a major industrial region around Chicago and Northwest Indiana. So, you know, those partnerships can help facilitate additional nature-based work through things like tree plantings in underserved communities, and, you know, just getting that volunteer aspect of getting out and working on some of these environmental projects.
I think that's really cool, and that's really interesting. Like, I find it very, like helpful to our public and also our wildlife.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes... Sorry, what was that?
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just gonna add, you know, sometimes people might write off a company, you know, because of maybe their public image is something where you think, oh, they're a big emitter of greenhouse gases. But really, they have, you know, there's really good opportunities in the conservation space because I forget what the exact percentage of land is, but most of the land in the U.S. especially is privately owned. And so being able to connect to a whole sector of private landowners, which is the business economy, basically, you know, you're getting at a region that might not normally be targeted for conservation. And, you know, so that's kind of our niche, so to speak, in the environmental nonprofit world. You know, there are some other business-related organizations out there. One is like the U.S. Green Business Council, for example. But we're really focused on the conservation aspect that these businesses have with their opportunities on their lands.
My other question was, what companies do you work with to help spread the word?
So we actually...
helping change. And what is your scaling of local level climate action?
Okay, I think there's a couple parts to that question, and I caught the first part, so I'm going to respond to that about which companies we work with to help spread the word. So we do work with companies like waste management, the company that comes and collects your garbage. We work with CRH, which is a quarry or aggregate type of industry, mining stone and that sort of thing. It's hard to name them all, but we do work with a lot. We work with Chemours, which is a chemical company, BP, Shell, ExxonMobil, Exelon, which is an energy company in the Northeast and Chicagoland area. We work with Bayer. We work with... I mean, that's just to name a few. And basically, we like to, you know, tell their story about the work that they're doing as far as conservation work. And so we do that through a variety of methods, both on our website as well as helping them with press releases, that sort of thing. So we have blog posts that the president of our organization writes. We do tweets and we post a lot on LinkedIn. Through our professional networks. So that's kind of, you know, the main avenues that we communicate about the work that we're doing with these companies.
Do you know, like a rough estimate of, like, a scaling action for climate?
I'm not sure what...
Kind of local level climate action.
So, we work less in the climate space. It's not a main component of our business. So I'm not sure that I'm well equipped to answer that question.
So what attributes does someone need to have in order to really be successful in your position of work?
That's a great question. So, you know, attention to detail is often very important, and you'll see that a lot in job descriptions. You know, really being driven to, both, you know, do the work that's asked of you, as well as coming up and contributing ideas on your own. You know, kind of that innovative thinking. A lot of companies and organizations look for that in potential hires. This was kind of my first career-related job coming out of grad school, and it was a temporary position to start out with. But one of the things that I always look back and think on is, you know, part of my success within the organization is, you know, people would ask me to do something and I was always, well, they wouldn't even ask me directly, but they would open it up to whoever. And, you know, volunteering and jumping at opportunities as they come along is really important and will really drive your success both within the organization and then outside, you know, beyond with your career.
In your opinion, like, what problems will we face if we continue with conserving the way we're conserving?
So I think, you know, some of the biggest issues that we face are coordinating across different types of jurisdictions. So, you know, both at the state level, county level, you know, across political borders, like Canada and Mexico. So being able to make those partnerships is really vital. And they are happening, but it, you know, there's always political challenges involved with some of those interactions. So I think consistency is key. So things like jumping in and out of the Paris Climate Accord is probably not helpful in the long run. But, you know, I think as long as we continue to collaborate and utilize each other's strengths, I think it will push us in the right direction. Not without its challenges, but yeah.
What are the biggest challenges that your organization has faced?
So the pandemic obviously was a big one. We were able to kind of pivot pretty quickly in terms of, you know, whether or not we're going into the office, because we already had a work from home policy in place. And so, you know, that change was it was easier for us than for other organizations. But also just, I think this is a challenge for anyone in the working world is employee turnover. So, you know, people are always coming and going, and that does make it a little bit harder for continuity of projects and that sort of thing. But at the same time, it also brings in opportunities as far as getting new, fresh perspectives on particular topics or issues that you're dealing with.
Is there any other questions or you'd like to add here? Is there anything else you'd like to speak on or feel like there's an issue or anything in your opinion?
Sure. So part of my perspective, you know, both within the Wildlife Habitat Council and outside of it, as my own career development, is I'm very interested in things like landscape ecology. So looking at the bigger picture when it comes to conservation efforts, I really like some of the data aspects of that. So I do a little bit in GIS work, you know, using geographic information to tell a story about the type of work and data that's being collected in the field. The other, you know, important piece that I think is still kind of growing and has a lot more potential is the area of citizen science. I don't know how much exposure you all have to that, but it's a very interesting perspective. It's basically using things like smartphone app technology to contribute to a greater science effort that can actually pull some really interesting and meaningful data for researchers to be able to do that they wouldn't otherwise be able to do without the outsourcing of the data collection. So there's things like eBird, that collects a lot of data on bird species, things like iNaturalist, LeafSnap, you know, helps identify plants, that sort of thing. And I mean, there's other things that are not based on your smartphone, but you can spend some time on like Google Earth and help researchers track ice flows on glaciers and that sort of thing. So I think it's really important for all of us to kind of keep that in the back of our mind as, you know, potential hobbies or interests and, you know, contribute to a greater scientific pursuit.
I have one more question. What should people look more into when wanting to help out the environment and nature?
That's a great question. So I would definitely look towards local organizations as a starting point. They're usually the best resources on the ground for knowing what is the right thing to do in my area. They have a lot of really great programs out there, both for conservation and then other environmental initiatives such as recycling and water conservation and that sort of thing. So, you know, there's a lot of things based at the watershed level. So, like, a lot of those river groups are often called, like, friends of the such and such river, or water or river keepers. That's a network of additional water conservation. Lost my train of thought for there for a second. You know, there's lots of civic organizations that do things like Sierra Club, your local Audubon chapter, if you're really interested in birds specifically. They do other conservation work beyond birds as well, but, you know, that's kind of the first, their first passion, so to speak. And then, you know, beyond that, you can expand into regional organizations or even national level organizations when you're thinking about things from a slightly broader context in terms of what you can do to help the environment.
I just had a quick question. When you were talking about tracking, like, birds, for instance.
Yeah.
I know how... not mountain lions, but certain lions, like, they have a collar that you can track them with. Do you guys, like, have a part in that as well, or do you guys...
We don't directly, but I actually was helping a Boeing site in the Santa Susana range, or between Los Angeles and... Simi Valley, I think, is where it is. They weren't directly involved in it, but they did have some mountain lions that had those collars on them pass through their property, and so they were able to, work with, I think it's the U.S. Fish and Wildlife that's working on that, probably another California state agency as well. But they were able to work with them to make sure that the data was collected in the right way. But yeah, our organization wasn't involved in that directly, but we do encourage other, like, our companies to get involved in that sort of work.
I think that's great that, like, you know, your organization's not only willing to help, like, just their organization, also help mm-hmm. others, because I know, like, organizations, even, like, I'm in the sort of thing, someone doesn't, like, hey, no, it's only my idea, or something like that, so I think it's kind of cool that it's, like, team building,
or yeah. Team,
like, all together.
Yeah, collaboration is really important in the conservation and environmental space, because, you know, nobody can do it alone, the problem is just too big. So, you know, we need all the help we can get and all the ideas that we can get.
So now to our conclusion. Should the government take aggressive steps to combat climate change? What do you think, Kaylee?
In my opinion, based on what Doreen said, and also the article, should the U.S. government take aggressive steps to combat climate change? I believe we should think about certain causes and issues of climate change, like air quality, due to fires, and some loss of the landscapes due to those fires, and also, like, the landscape that may be privately owned and serve a purpose on helping conserve animals and helping those reservations. What do you think, Kidira?
Well, I agree. I think the government should take steps to combat climate change. Doreen stated that conservation and, like, helping the, like, conservation of animals can help with climate. And if we work together, I think it can make a big difference.
Yeah,
Well, that's all for this podcast. Bye.